This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Hansen?
Here.
Heideprim?
Here.
Knutson?
Here.
Olson?
Here.
Roden?
Here.
Turbuckberry?
Here.
Gray?
Here.
Dempster?
Here. Motion to approve the minutes. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We have three items this morning. First is a confirmation. The second is Senate Bill 57. And the third is Senate Bill 82. Always hard to judge, but my suspicion is Senate Bill 82 will engender some controversy. And as such, what I would ask that we do is when we hear proponent testimony, is I would like to aim for 20 minutes of proponent testimony. So as those of you who are in favor of Senate Bill 82, if you would gauge your initial remarks and try and gauge your remarks with respect to others who want to testify, could I just see, just so that we're all aware and so that proponents are aware, could I see a show of hands for those people who intend on, or for those who are proponents and intend on speaking on Senate Bill 82? Just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Thank you. And same opponents for Senate Bill 82. Like to hold testimony to about 20 minutes, and again, just so that you are aware yourselves and have the ability to gauge the length of your testimony. With that, confirmation of Timothy Reich as Assistant Adjutant General. I believe he's here. General. We can actually have pages help you do that, or...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Colonel Tim Reich, and it's a pleasure to be here this morning. I've handed out a two-sided sheet that just summarizes some of my civilian education and experience in military education and schooling. And if you have any questions on that, I'd be happy to answer those. Very briefly, I've served as a citizen soldier in South Dakota Army National Guard for just over 30 years. Starting out as a private E1 in Howard, South Dakota, when they used to have a guard unit back in 1978. I received my commission through the South Dakota Military Academy in 1980 and have served in really a wide variety of positions in line units and on headquarters since that time. Currently, my assignment is the commander of the 109th Group in Rapid City. It's got a strength of 915 soldiers. And I've been the group commander since September of 2005. I very much look forward to working with our Adjutant General, General Steve Dewan, to continue to build on the proud legacy of the South Dakota Army National Guard. You know, our nation has been at war for 7 continuous years now, and it's taken a toll on our military, but I think our Guard has paid particular attention to the soldiers and their family, and in a volunteer army, it's very important to have the commitment of the service members, and I believe that we're in very good shape there. My priorities are to continue to work with the soldiers and the families to give them the kind of respect and benefits that's commensurate with their dedication and service. And I look forward to also working on matters of strategic vision with the Adjutant General and serving in all those capacities that that the 3,400 soldiers of the Army Guard have come to expect. This concludes my remarks, Mr. Chairman, subject to any questions that you would have.
Thank you, Colonel. Other proponents? Other proponents? Opponents? Opponents? Questions for the Colonel? Senator Heideprim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel Reich, I think the month was March of 1983. I was in the House here. We finished the session. I got in my car and drove to Howard, South Dakota to start a jury trial the next day. And there I met the youngest sheriff in the state of South Dakota, perhaps in the state's history. You had been on the job all of 2 months at that time. I can tell this committee without fear of contradiction that the integrity the colonel has shown in his work here in state government and in the military started probably before you were even the sheriff in Minor County, but it certainly was true there then, and I can tell you that the people in that area had the utmost respect for you and the job you did for them, as we do here in state government. So I'm happy to be able to support your nomination.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Bella.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I've known Mr. Reich since 1983 when he was the sheriff, and since is the Secretary of Corrections. He did an outstanding job as sheriff. He's done an outstanding job as Secretary of Corrections, and I'm confident he'll do an outstanding job as he has as Assistant Adjutant. And I hereby urge advice and consent, and I will move that we do advise and consent.
We have a motion. Second. We have a motion. We have a second by Senator Gray. Is additional questions or additional comments? Additional comments? We have a motion. We have a second. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbach-Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Motion passes. That brings us to Senate Bill 57, allow the use of energy efficiency and conservation to count towards the state's renewable and recycled energy objective. You'd be kind enough to use that microphone over to the left. I think that is a little better of a microphone, and we want people to hear you.
No problem. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Steve Kolbeck, and I'm a commissioner with the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. My comments here today are supported by my colleagues, Dusty Johnson and Gary Hansen. Last year, as all of you know, the legislature created a renewable and recycled energy objective, setting the goal at 10% of our state's electricity to come from renewable and recycled sources. This year, we introduced Senate Bill 57. It was created to add conserved energy as a third way to meet the 10% voluntary objective. The PUC believes that energy efficiency should be encouraged in the same way renewable energy currently is. Energy efficiency contributes to economic and environmental perspectives. It is as attractive as wind and other renewable energy sources. In the interest of fairness, we feel that energy efficiency should be viewed in the same light. 13 other states currently include energy efficiency in their RPS or renewable goals. Energy efficiency and conserved programs may also provide an opportunity for utilities to reduce costs. Measurably lowering of customer consumption becomes as valuable as additional generation, but with no harmful accompanying pollution. I would like to point out that these programs are not a no-cost option to electricity providers. Education of consumers about energy efficiency takes time, materials, and other resources, just as building a wind turbine or a methane digester does. However, we feel the net gain to consumer rates will be in the positive. And finally, please note that the bill also changes the timelines for filing reports regarding a provider's progress. The timelines are changed so that the provider can use the calendar year as a basis for the report. This will put South Dakota in line with most of the states in the region and should make reports easier for multi-state utilities. I appreciate your time this morning, and I thank you for listening. I hope you will support Senate Bill 57. Thank you,
Commissioner. Other proponents of Senate Bill 57? Other proponents of Senate Bill 57?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Willard with the South Dakota Electric Utility Companies, briefly.
Welcome, Mr. Willard.
Thank you. I won't double up on Commissioner Kolbeck's comments other than to tell you that conservation is a little different because conservation is personal. And this putting conservation in the REO gives the companies the opportunity to take the message of conservation out to the people. Because as exciting as recycle and renewable is and all the challenges that come along with the integration, conservation is something that we can all participate in. So whether it's your home or your business or your industry or whatever, it affects your bottom line, and that's a good thing. And so this is it's a move that we're thrilled to participate with. It's one that we're supportive of. We don't underestimate the challenges that come along with defining it. But there's an awful lot of models that are out there that we can work off of. So it's a good bill, and we sure hope you pass it.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. Other proponents of Senate Bill 57? Other proponents of Senate Bill 57? Members of the committee, questions for proponents? Questions for proponents? Opponents of Senate Bill 57? Opponents of Senate Bill 57? Boy, we're pretty efficient this morning. Close for committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman, move to pass.
We have a do pass motion from Senator Roden. We have a second from Senator Olson. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Senator.
I'm fortunate enough to have in District 8 the corporate headquarters for East River Electric and Sioux Valley Energy and Heartland Consumers Power District that I actually work for. And so I would urge the rest of the board to, or the committee, excuse me, to pass this piece of legislation. It's a great step that the PUC is taking towards creating awareness of energy efficiency and conservation, and I can't say enough about how important it is for us to take these strides.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there additional discussion? Senator Knutson.
Mr. Chairman, this bill actually amends the legislation that Joel Dykstra and I served as prime sponsors on last year. I think it makes sense to include energy efficiency as well for the reasons Mr. Willard and Commissioner Kolbeck stated.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there additional discussion? It is a do-pass motion. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Heideprim.
Aye.
Knutson.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Trebekberry.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Dempster.
Aye. Motion passes. That then brings us to Senate Bill 82. And again, as I think I had mentioned, we have 20 minutes scheduled for proponents. Please be kind enough to gauge your testimony with respect to that. We'll then open up for questions of proponents. Then we'll hear testimony from opponents, and then we will reopen questions from members of the committee to both opponents and proponents. Then we'll close for a committee discussion and have our vote. With that, let's go. I'll ask for Senate Bill number 82. Senate Bill 82 is provide for the right to possess a firearm on the campuses of public institutions of higher education. Proponents. Time is 12 minutes after 10. My goodness, we are efficient, aren't we?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Senator Dennis Schmidt.
Welcome,
I am speaking.
Welcome, Senator Schmidt.
Thank you. I will be speaking shortly or very briefly on Senate Bill 82. This bill is a bill we've heard before, but it's a very good bill, and I have some remarks that are very important. I did some studying over the summer, and I found facts. Not just emotional appeals, but facts that really deal with this issue. And the act, this bill, it's an act to provide for the right to possess a firearm on campus of public institutions of higher education. No public institution of higher education may regulate or restrict the right to carry or possess a firearm in accordance with state law. In accordance with state law. No public institution of higher education may expel or dismiss or penalize any person who carries or possesses a firearm in accordance with the state law. However, many public institutions of higher education may require that any firearm in a campus dormitory of a public institution of higher education not in personal or immediate possession will be stored in a locked gun safe. For the purpose of this act only, the term public institution of higher education means any public post-secondary educational institution under the Board of Regents or any public post-secondary technical institute under the Board of Education. And some interesting facts that I would like to share about this is that we should recognize that adults on college campuses have the same right to self-defense as every other adult citizen in South Dakota enjoys. And some interesting things that I found out as I studied this summer was there was no less than 9 mass shootings in gun-free zones. And just a little mark for the site, a side note on this is crooks and bad guys know how to read. And these fellas and who did these shootings, they came to these campuses, and that's where most of them happened, was gun-free campuses. Came to kill people. They didn't rob anybody. They didn't beat anybody up. They killed people. And very briefly, just the numbers that we're talking about is to show you how important this is. In Illinois alone, on one campus, 24 people were shot. At Elaine Bryant, that's a ladies' clothing store, 6 people were shot. In 07, West Rhodes Mall, 12 people. Virginia Tech, 49 people were killed. Did that guy come to shoot people? He certainly did. Amish School shooting, 10 kids. Red Lake School, 24 were shot. Columbine School Massacre, 35 were shot. Luby's Cafeteria, 43 people. McDonald's Massacre, 40. And it's not just in the United States. We're having shootings out of this country as well in gun-free zones. So you know the crooks are coming to these places because they know there'll be no one there to go against them. And so they just come right in and attack. And I was Saturday, I had the opportunity to be on a large college campus, and I drove on the campus for a meeting, but I was just thought, I'm going to just check this out. I drove on campus and virtually undetected because there was hundreds of cars driving around. And I looked around and I thought, how could I come on this campus besides the gate? Well, everywhere you could walk all around the campus. There was no fences, no electronic detection, no security that I could find. And so then I thought, how can I enter any of these buildings? And you know what? I could have been packing an iron or a firearm and walked right on campus. And so that's to say, we have to do something. And I should have, in my remarks about how many shootings and where, I should have, the first one was 1984. I should have said that. The last one was 08. So this has been going on. This isn't a weekend spree. This has been going on for years. And have we said we should do something about this? Well, I'm here to say we should. It's getting a long time where we've done nothing. So I suggest today that maybe we do something. And in conclusion, should a person have less freedoms and safety than anyone else simply because he or she goes to college? Well, the answer is no. Should a society trust a person less than other people of equal age simply because he or she attends college? The answer is no. And if a person is mature and responsible enough to cast a vote or fight a war or carry a gun and exercise every other right of citizenship that every other adult citizen has or enjoys, then why should he or she be disarmed and defenseless in an institution of higher learning? And he shouldn't be. These places have become a haven for a shooter, and I'm asking us to do something about it, even today. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Senator. Other proponents? The Senate Bill 82. Other proponents? Derek, welcome, and just check your microphone to make certain it's on, if you would.
There it goes. As Vice President of SDS or the SDSU Rifle Association, I'd like to say that we do support this bill. There is support on campus to allow concealed carry in accordance with existing state laws. And looking at other states, the state of Utah, all 9 public universities in Utah have allowed concealed carry on campus since this fall semester of 2006. Also at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, they have allowed concealed carry on campus since 2003. And at Blue Ridge Community College in Wires Cave, Virginia, they have allowed concealed carry on campus since 1995. At all 11 of these public universities, there have been no incidents of gun violence, suicides, accidental discharges, or thefts in over 80 semesters of teaching. Looking at the SDSU policy manual, even tasers are prohibited on campus, a less than lethal self-defense mechanism. So even using a less than lethal method to protect ourselves, we're still denied it. Firearms are also allowed to be stored in the vehicles or the locks, personal vehicles, as long as they're out of plain sight. However, once a student or faculty leaves their vehicle, they're essentially defenseless as they transit about campus. Now, the university can punish students and faculty through censorship or expulsion for bringing a firearm on campus, but not a visitor. So as a my parents were alumni of SDSU, they could bring a firearm on campus and be able to carry it around without facing any punishment. Lastly, this is not just a defense against mass shootings. It's also a defense against other violent crimes. At SDSU, there was one rape in each year from 2005 to 2007 in the residence halls. And in 2007, there were 2 aggravated assaults on campus, and there was 1 aggravated assault on campus in 2005. So this also shows that there's incidents of violent crime that do occur on campus, and the students and faculty will be able to protect themselves from such incidents should it happen. But also the issue that comes most frequently to mind is mass shootings. So, and campus is relatively safe, but violent crime does happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 82? Other proponents of Senate Bill 82?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate Committee. My name is Don Kopp. Excuse me. Thank you, sir. And I am here representing a majority of my district in East Rapid City and Rapid Valley in this issue. I would like to start out first by saying that to require a student to keep his gun locked up in the car or in a locker in the house is akin to leaving the fire extinguishers empty in the hallway until the fire starts. When they need it now. I don't see any reason why we would disallow a citizen of our country the right to defend himself should the situation arise. And in a hypothetical situation, I would like to say that if we knew of a certainty that an attack would take place in one of our universities this week, would we disallow a student the right to carry a gun onto campus if he is so licensed to do so? I suggest to you that the time in which we live that day could be tomorrow. And I would ask you to please support Senate Bill 82. I think it's important, and I think that to deny our citizens the right to defend themselves is an atrocity. Thank you.
Other proponents of Senate Bill 82? Other proponents?
Okay. Hello, I'm Brian Eckrich. I go to school at SDSU.
Welcome, Brian.
President of the SDSU Rifle Association with Derek. I guess to start off, one of our projects this last semester was to get a petition around, and we have 155 signatures.
pages
from,
if you'd be kind
faculty
enough to.
In support of this bill. So I guess what I want to talk about, just why I support this. I have a problem on campus, you know, with their security measures because they like to make us think we're safe. And kind of what I think it was Senator Schmidt, he was saying, you know, campus is not a secure place, you know. I posed the question, what is physically stopping someone from walking into Rotunda D, which is 400-seat classroom, you know? What's stopping them, you know? We have a campus alert system which says, okay, you get a text message to say someone's coming to shoot you. And I guess if you're not in the vicinity, great, you can go hide. But what's that do for you in the immediate vicinity? You know, maybe you can throw your phone at them. I don't know. But I guess we need some measure of defending yourself. I mean, because otherwise, I mean, the cops, they show up, and the response time is maybe 3 minutes at the best. And I like to throw the quote out there, when seconds matter, cops are only minutes away. So they're usually there to come clean up the mess. You know, they don't stop it. I know one example, Illinois, 24 people got killed. Cops got there in 3 minutes. It was over, you know. They didn't. You know, they did their job, but they didn't do anything. They didn't solve the problem. So I guess we just need a better, something more. And I think having responsible and certain responsible individuals would provide that defense. Another reason I support this bill is a continuity of the law. Right now, South Dakota is one of six states that allows individuals 18 years of older age to carry a permit. I have a permit myself. And I think it's somewhat contradictory for you guys. I assume you're the ones that are in charge of that, making those rules. You say that we are responsible enough, you know, because that's the law. And then you have this other agency institution which says, no, we disagree with you. We don't think this group of people, these students, are capable of doing this. And I guess I want everybody to be on the same page, you know. And also, I guess I just read a little bit ago about a law that says no state agency may adopt a rule which contradicts the firearms policy. Now, what are you guys going to say when I guess, what will you guys say? I mean, is it okay for them to go against the rules, or would you be in favor of upholding the current state law? So I guess that's kind of why I support it. And finally, I guess one kind of misconception about this bill. I've been talking to tons and tons of people on campus, and they say, you know, oh, this is a terrible bill because everyone will have guns. It'll be like the Wild West, you know, rabble, rabble, you know. And what this bill does, it only allows individuals with permits to carry. You know, not everybody has guns. I would be the first to admit that if everyone had guns, I'd be scared because there's quite a few not bright people out there. But, you know, I don't see any reason why a certain few, like myself, Derek, I know a few other people with permits, I know they're not going to do anything stupid, and I think this bill doesn't seem so radical if you look at it, you know. Only maybe 5 people out of 400 are going to actually have a pistol, and they are responsible people. So I guess that's my 2 cents.
Great, thank you. We're running short. I'm short of time. Other proponents.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tom Bruner, District 29.
Welcome, Thomas.
Mr. Chairman and committee, thank you. I realize we're running short. The person following me will take about a minute. We all know how fast I can talk, so we're going to buzz right through this.
Well, we might try and slow you down a little bit.
That's not fair. A couple points I'd like to make.
We'll certainly give you some latitude.
Okay, thank you very much. Is that when we talk about these mass shootings and whatnot, there's one way to stop those, and it's been documented they've been stopped with armed citizens. Armed citizens have stopped these. One example is the church shooting in Colorado Springs. Virginia Somme took care of the situation, and only two people were killed in that situation, and we know the police there said 50 to 100 could have been killed had she not acted. And that's really my point. I think these kids that are here said it very well. They're responsible. And, you know, in state law, we have written what it takes to get a permit. You have to be 18. You never plead guilty to a felony or crime. Not habitually intoxicated or drugged. No history of violence. Not been found in the previous 10 years to be a danger to others or danger to yourself. And been a resident of the county or municipality where the application is made for at least 30 days, and no violations concerning a felony or misdemeanor in the 5 years preceding. So these are good people. They have to be citizens, certainly no fugitives, and they deserve to be treated like first-class citizens that they are. They certainly are upstanding citizens, and to tell them they can't, their rights are suddenly gone when they step on a college campus is just not fair. I would just like to bring your attention to what our state constitution says, and as it says, the right of a citizen to bear arms in defense of themselves and the state shall not be denied. Well, that's what we're doing at this point, is we're denying those citizens to do that. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we passed state law that limits the authority of state agencies to promulgate these rules. It's in South Dakota Codified Law 126-6.10. But elsewhere in state law, and we recognize this, that board regents, colleges can make policy, and that's what they've done. So basically we have a seemingly contradiction, and I think what we are intending to do, and Senate Bill 82 does, is just clarify that. And one of my goals as a representative is when we have situations that are seemingly where the waters are muddy, to try to clarify that and clear up the water, and that's our goal here. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. With latitude, but not much, we have one other proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Zach Lautenschlager. I represent South Dakota gun owners. We have 3,500 members statewide.
Welcome.
I am simply here to deliver 395 signed petitions from some of our members. With your permission, I will briefly read the short petition and deliver it to you.
You have it.
Thank you, sir. Whereas the right to keep and bear arms in self-defense is guaranteed by the South Dakota and United States constitutions, and whereas both state and federal constitutions prohibit the denial or infringement of the right to bear arms, and whereas the right to bear arms clearly includes the ability of the citizen to carry a handgun for self-defense, and whereas armed citizens stop numerous criminal attacks each year, including attempted mass shootings, saving hundreds of lives, and whereas laws and policies which disarm law-abiding citizens by creating so-called gun-free zones actually help cause mass shootings by giving armed criminals a monopoly on force, and whereas every so-called gun-free zone is a direct denial of and infringement on the right to keep and bear arms, therefore, I respectfully urge you to provide for the safety of the citizens of this state by supporting Senator Schmidt's Citizen Self-Defense Bill to end numerous gun-free zones in South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you. I presume you will leave those petitions with us. Thank you. Members of the committee, questions for proponents? Questions for proponents? Opponents of Senate Bill 82. Opponents of Senate Bill 82?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Alex Hallback, and I'm a second-year law student at USD and represent the Student Federation as their executive director and was previously the Students Association president at SDSU. I appreciate the opportunity to voice my concern and opposition to Senate Bill 82. The Student Federation recently unanimously passed a resolution that I would like to read to you now. Entitled Student Federation Opposition to Senate Bill 82. Whereas the Student Federation respects the Second Amendment and all citizens' rights to bear arms, whereas hunting is an activity that many students who attend the institutes of higher education in the state of South Dakota participate in, whereas the need to recognize these freedoms while accommodating for the safety of all people living on and visiting the university campus is one that deserves much consideration, whereas providing a comfortable, safe environment is important for the students, faculty, and staff of the institutes of higher education in South Dakota, whereas allowing firearms on campuses and academic buildings poses a great concern for many students, faculty, and career service employees. Therefore, be it resolved that the Student Federation opposes Senate Bill 82 and encourages the South Dakota legislature to vote no. Therefore, be it further resolved that the Student Federation encourages the decision regarding the regulation at the university level to be retained by the Board of Regents. This resolution, as I said, was passed unanimously through the Student Federation, which represents all 33,000 students in the higher education system in the state. I think it's interesting, as I walked into the Capitol this morning, printed on the doors is South Dakota Codified Law 1422, which prohibits guns in the Capitol, yet this bill would allow students to carry them into the classrooms. If the legislature doesn't want them in the Capitol, we certainly don't want them in the classrooms. And there are other students here with me today that would like to voice their concern also for this bill. And I guess that's all I have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Other opponents? Other opponents?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chris Dugard, and I am the president of the Students Association at South Dakota State University. So I'm here to represent the 12,000 students of SDSU. This issue is one that when it was brought up last year, there was much discussion on it at the university level, and similarly this year. I do not mean to discount the results of the petitioning that our students did as well through the SDSU Rifle Association. I thank them for coming in. Voicing their opinion today. But in addition, I would like to say that that represents a very, very minute portion of our campus. If those were all students, which I'm guessing there were students and faculty, as you stated before, it would represent about 1% of our campus population. At SDSU, we do have a very involved, interested, and vocal student population. For example, if there is an issue that comes forward that students feel very strongly about one way or another, they are not afraid to get behind it and not afraid to voice their position. For example, less than a month ago, we had a student issue come up and relate to technology, and our Students Association had petitions with a number of 2,300 signatures in 4 days. And so we can get around and get the word out and get support for things that students do support. And I can tell you that in this case, people have rallied around this issue, and they've rallied in opposition to Senate Bill 82. I bring a resolution. I'm not going to read it. It's very similar in language to what you heard from Executive Director Hallbeck. It passed our Senate overwhelmingly. We represent students from every academic college on campus, including the graduate school. It passed by the vote of 27-3 in our student Senate on Monday night. And the one thing I would add is, although you'll find that many of the other institute or other organizations around campus, things like the Council of Higher Education, American Association of University Professors, Academic Senate, Career Service Advisory Council, I don't think they hit the timing as well as we could meeting Monday night before coming out Wednesday. But I can say that last year with identical language, each one of those professional organizations at South Dakota State also voiced their opposition specifically to this same language. So I would say that overwhelmingly you'll see that with the general campus at SDSU, you see opposition to Senate Bill 82. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Dugard. Other opponents? Other opponents to Senate Bill 82.
Good morning. My name is Art Mabry. I'm the Chief of Police in the City of Vermilion, South Dakota.
Welcome, Art. Good to have you here.
Thank you. A little background. I've got 35 years of law enforcement experience, but probably even more importantly, my son and daughter-in-law are graduates of Virginia Tech. Probably nobody in this room was more impacted by that situation than I was, and I still sit here and oppose this bill. Let me give you a law enforcement perspective regarding what we refer to as an active shooter that takes place in these mass killings. But before I do that, let me also bring something to your attention. It was mentioned about the church shooting where the security guard was able to step forward and stop that. It should be noted that security guard was a trained police officer, no longer employed as a police officer, but had been through the academy, was a certified officer. Our days of setting up a perimeter and waiting for the SWAT team to arrive are a thing of the past. We learned our lesson at Columbine. Now, the process is a rapid response. First officers are on the scene and entering the building within minutes. We don't wait till we have 30 officers to enter a building. We go in with what we have as quick as we can. That might be one officer, that might be four officers. Training now is you get four there, you go in. We train with other agencies. In Vermilion, I can tell you the Vermilion Police Department trains annually on an active shooter scenario with the University of South Dakota Department of Public Safety, with the Clay County Sheriff's Office, and with the Highway Patrol. When we enter a building, we always enter the building anticipating that there will be multiple shooters and not just one. Speed and time are the most important and valuable aspects of reaching the shooter. We are looking for guns when we go in. In the best case scenario, if we come across an innocent person who happens to be holding a handgun, and they do everything that we tell them to do, it takes time, it takes resources, it endangers the officers as they're in that building, as they're now focusing on this individual, because we don't know if he's just posing as an innocent individual or if he's involved in this active shooting. We have to secure that individual. We have to take them out of the building. If we have a team of three, that takes us down to two. In the worst case scenario, any perceived aggression toward us is going to be met with deadly force. If there's an accidental pointing, unintentional pointing of that weapon at the police officers, there is a good chance that we'd be met with deadly force. And we've all heard about officers are trained in a shoot, don't shoot scenario. I'm here to tell you, in 35 years of law enforcement experience, lots and lots of training in shoot, don't shoot, I've seen very good officers in that training shoot an innocent person. It's training, it's not perfect. I also want to touch a little bit on the psychological aspect of an active shooter. They are well prepared, they have it well planned, they know they will die, they expect to die. The police, on the other hand, are well prepared, trained with equipment, well planned. Again, we train and train and train. We understand that we may die, but we're trained to survive. An 18-year-old with a pistol, not prepared, he's excited, scared, has no plan, has no training. The requirements for a concealed weapon permit hardly prepare anyone for this situation. And probably worst of all, every 18-year-old out there thinks they're bulletproof. So who should confront this shooter? Should it be the 18-year-old with no equipment other than a handgun, no training, excited and scared? He'll probably get one shot. And I can pretty much guarantee you will not consider what the background is of the shot that he's taken. That means that innocent people behind the active shooter could be hit. Or do we confront the active shooter with a professional law enforcement officer who will have multiple weapons, semi-automatic and automatic rifle, and that's typically what we're going against in these shootings. We train in marksmanship. We train in knowing what the danger is to others before we fire our weapon. And we train over and over again with different scenarios. We're calm and we're prepared. I have no doubt that the sponsors of this bill had good intentions, but based on my 35 years of experience, I'm strongly opposed to Senate Bill 82 because it is short-sighted, it lacks common sense, and instead of protecting our students, it creates the potential to cause them great harm. Thank you.
Other opponents, and thank you for your testimony. Other opponents to Senate Bill 82.
Good morning, Senator Dempster, members of the committee. My name is Sam Nelson. I'm a first-year law student at the University of South Dakota, and I'm the former state and local government chairman of the student government at South Dakota State.
Welcome, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you. This is the second time I've come to oppose the exact same bill, and I just wanted to share some thoughts briefly with you. You heard testimony from the proponents talking about how, you know, in several of these shootings, a armed citizen could have stopped, you know, the violent offender. I think it's important to note that in many of these shootings, mental instability on the part of the shooter was a major factor in why they committed the crime they did. And to be frank with you, most of these people went into the shootings prepared to die. I think that's important to note when weighing the argument that a armed citizen with a firearm is going to be a deterrent to a person who's mentally unstable and already willing to die. Secondly, generally, the Second Amendment right to bear arms is subject to reasonable restrictions. Federation Director Halbach pointed that out very well when he said that we have a state law that does not allow you to carry firearms into the state capitol. That's a reasonable restriction designed by the legislature, you know, to protect the legislators and citizens when they come to petition the legislature. Thirdly, I'd like to point out that in large classrooms like Rotunda D in Brookings, it was mentioned, that houses over 400 people. The police chief, who just spoke, mentioned that his people are highly trained and know how to deal with the shooter. I don't see anything when I read the language of the requirements for the concealed weapons permits that indicates to me that by possessing a concealed weapons permit, you're in any way able to tactically deal with the shooter just because you are permitted to carry a firearm. In closing, I would like to echo the comments that were mentioned by Christopher Dugard, that a vast majority of students oppose this. We don't oppose the Second Amendment. I don't personally. I can only speak for myself today. But I do feel strongly that reasonable restrictions are necessary. This rule has worked here. It continues to work. And I think allowing people to carry firearms on campus will certainly create more problems than they will solve. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Other opponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Budmeyer. I'm from the University of South Dakota. I'm currently the student government president. I'm going to keep it very brief. Last night, our student government passed a resolution overwhelmingly in opposition to firearms on campus. As a student who walks the campus every day, I feel safe currently. I don't feel the same. I don't think that I would feel the same if Senate Bill 82 passed. So, on behalf of the student body at the University of South Dakota, I urge you to not support Senate Bill 82. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ryan. Other opponents to Senate Bill 82?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, very brief. My name is Scott Larson. I'm a senator representing the students from the University of South Dakota. Last year, I was here in direct opposition to the same bill as a senator from South Dakota State University. Over the past year, I feel that I've been in contact with a large number of students from both campuses, and students are not in support of this bill. Quite frankly, college students are under a lot of stress and do not need added pressure of weapons on campus. Ironically, the very students whom this bill is supposed to protect are frightened by it and not in support of it. Therefore, I urge you not to support Senate Bill 82. Thank you.
Other opponents to Senate Bill 82? We're closing in on about 3 or 4 minutes left.
I think I can make this pretty quick. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Sandy Arsenault, and I'm the president and registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Education Association. I come from a family of avid hunters and gun enthusiasts, and I also am a concerned mother of a student at SDSU. I'm not going to repeat all of the things that you heard already because I think those messages were very strong, but I do believe that when we start the argument that students and teachers should have the right to defend themselves and weapons on campus should be a part of that plan poses a great concern for me. Responding to flying bullets with more flying bullets by individuals who are not trained to deal with such crisis situations scares me. I do have a daughter who attends SDSU, and I am very concerned for her safety. As an association president, when this bill was dropped, I did put out the word to ask our members how they felt about this, and overwhelmingly the response came back, do not support. I also did what every concerned mother would do. I texted my daughter at CSU and said, what do you think about this? And she said, are you crazy? And so, you know, some very strong opinions here, and I know that we've heard a lot of facts today, but I think the emotion must be along with this because it is a very emotional bill. I'd like to leave you with one last thought, and that is there's a reason we don't allow guns in establishments such as places like the Capitol building and the courthouses, and I hope that our students and staff at these higher institutions would warrant the same concern. I urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 82.
Thank you. Other opponents of Senate Bill 82?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Shackleton. I'm general counsel for the South Dakota Board of Regents.
Welcome, Jim.
As you know, very often the Board of Regents comes to you with a proposal. We make the comment that this is a research-based approach to the problem. Although a violent gun shooting on campus is an exceptionally rare occurrence, on average 16 incidents out of 4,000 institutions nationwide, very rare occurrence. The Board of Regents has been very careful to try to put in place all of the recommendations that come out of the very same people who are responsible for protecting the President of the United States. We looked at the recommendations of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Secret Service, and we have implemented them and are continuing to implement them as we sit. These include creating a culture of awareness. We have so that everybody knows that if somebody is acting out and behaving strange, there is a way to bring that to the attention of somebody centrally located in the university, and it will be investigated, and we will bring in law enforcement. We will bring in appropriate experts to try to evaluate under the Secret Service criteria whether this person poses a risk of injury to anybody else on campus. If so, we will intervene. We have put in place numerous redundant systems to make sure that we have mechanisms to get out emergency information to all members of the university community who are on campus that day, or even if they're off campus. That includes text messaging. It includes a cell phone if students want to go there. And it includes an automatic web page that says nothing but what the emergency information is and how to begin to protect yourself. We have begun to train our employees to make certain that they understand what they should be doing in the event of an emergency. We're providing training to students so that they also are aware of what their options are and how they can implement those. We've also, as you have heard, been very close cooperation with local law enforcement to make sure that the people who are going to be the first responders know the campus, have an idea of how to move around the campus, and know who can to contact on campus if they have any questions. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you want. I'm mindful of the short time. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. This closes the time that we've scheduled for opponent testimony. Opportunity for rebuttal.
I was a policeman for 10 years in the Seattle area. And the officer back here, I appreciated much of what he had to say. I couldn't calculate in my mind that I was ever calm when I was called to a gun situation. We've got to learn that technique out there, I guess. But I didn't say that to be crude to him. It's a fact. It's very emotional for the policemen and all. And when they do go into a building, they are going to be excited, and they're going to have to check it out. We did the same thing. We often had to go through a number of people before we got to the source. But when we did get there, the incident was over, and you have to use precaution. And there are people that aren't even carrying guns that are suspicious. You got to deal with them. So I appreciate that argument, but on the side of the policemen, you've got to be careful. I mean, it's a real heavy-duty situation. And the students, I appreciate them taking the time to come down and share what they think. And the number of people that they said agree with them. We didn't have the time to survey the United States to find out how many agree with us, but I'm sure there's millions. So this is something we're going to have to really really be considerate of, and are we violating any constitutional laws? You know, I didn't know that a college could, I know they have rules, but I didn't know that they could go over the top of a constitutional law. And I believe that we have some constitutional law that speaks that way. And the one student suggested that he feels very peaceful. And I'm sure they did on the campuses the mornings before the shootings. So you don't know. They got the crook has the element of surprise. He's got the jump on us. And even before the police can even get there, that's when the shootings take place. And though I am to say police do a good job, they do their best, but sometimes their best is just a few minutes too late. And I would rather have an untrained guy with a gun, at least, to try to shoot this cat so he doesn't, or person, excuse me, would be able to protect me. I mean, if he shot somebody who was shooting at me, I wouldn't care if he was educated or not. I mean, good job. You know, I can go home and have time with my family. So that feeling safe isn't, you know, even though the sun is shining that day, you know, it could be the afternoon the shooter comes in. So, you know, saying I feel good isn't quite enough. We got to know that we've got something going. And so that's why I come and say, hey, some of these kids, I mean, we give them credit. You know, they're young students, and we listen to what they have to say, and they're not kids. They're, you know, they're young adults. And some of them guys have to stand in long lines with green uniforms and go into war. And we trust them there with guns, and then we kind of act like they're idiots if they carry a gun on campus. And not, one must believe, not everybody, just because we can, is going to carry a gun. Few do. But my thinking is there's already guns on campus, and unfortunately the crooks have them. And so we might think about that. And I don't know how trained they are either. So let's look on the side of being safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Members of the committee, questions for opponents or proponents? Senator Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forget his name, the Vice Chairman of the Rifle Association, if you could. Can you repeat your name, please?
Derek Douglas.
Mr. Douglas, you were in the Navy, is that correct?
Correct.
For 5 years?
Correct.
Did you have firearms training?
Only in boot camp.
In boot camp. In your dorms or your barracks or wherever you lived during a boot camp, were you allowed to have your weapon present?
No, the only even on the naval base at Norfolk Naval Station in Virginia, firearms were prohibited on the base, even by military members, unless you were carrying an arm in the line of duty.
Okay, thank you. Another question, if Senator I could, Gray. Mr. Shackleton. When I was in college, there were guns on campus.
I'm having difficulty hearing you.
When I was in college, there were guns on campus. There were lockups to put shotguns, for instance. When and why did that change?
Well, it was changed back. There was some variation from campus to campus. At some point, some of the universities were concerned that they didn't have the sufficiently robust facilities for storing weapons, and so they preferred not to have it and just have a flat ban. Because of the concern from students, and in part in response to the conversations last year, we've gone through and made sure that each of the campuses has adopted policy that makes clear that if there is a weapon in a locked vehicle, that will be consistent with our regulations, and that each campus reinstitute a gun locker that would be available for students who wish to have a gun on campus. So we've changed it back, and it's back to the way it used to be.
So to clarify, I could have a shotgun or I could have a 9mm in my trunk?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bella.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. I got a couple questions for the chief.
Yes,
I may have missed it, Chief, and if I did, I apologize. Are you appearing on behalf of yourself, or as the Chief of Vermilion, or the South Dakota Police Chiefs?
Although I am the president of South Dakota Police Chiefs Association, I am not representing them. I am representing the Vermilion Police Department, and I am representing the community of Vermilion.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Do you know the present policy at USD as far as rifles and shotguns on campus?
I know they have a lockup at Department of Public Safety, an armory that they lock those weapons in for the students.
Those are on campus?
Yes, that's on campus.
If shotguns and rifles are allowed on campus, in your professional experience, would you rather face a shotgun or a handgun?
Well, I think you're mixing things up here. They're allowed on campus, but they're locked in an armory. They don't have easy access to them.
They don't have access to them?
They don't have easy access to them. They have to go through the Department of Public Safety to obtain their shotgun or rifle.
Thank you.
Other questions, members of the committee, et cetera?
Chief, you're probably the best person to answer this. There's been a lot of reference to handguns, and I certainly know from personal experience that it's legal to own shotguns and rifles. If a South Dakota citizen is of legal age and otherwise not disabled by a felony conviction, is it also lawful for them to own automatic weapons?
No, not an automatic weapon.
So are semi-automatic weapons legal in South Dakota?
They can be, yes, but not automatic.
So if we're talking about firearms, are we talking about everything from, I guess, at the smallest end, a handgun, to at the other end, a semi-automatic weapon, is all contained in the term firearm?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Members of the committee, other questions? Members of the committee, other questions for opponents or proponents? Close for committee discussion and interaction. Senator Roden.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass.
We have a do pass motion from Senator Roden. We have a do pass motion from Senator Roden. We have a second from Senator Abdallah. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator?
I want to thank Senator Schmidt and Representative Bruner for bringing this. I think that this is a really healthy discussion to have, and I welcomed it. And I really want to thank the students that spoke on both sides. Not only is the right to bear arms an important right in our nation, but the right to come to your government and be heard is important, and I'm so proud both to live in a place where that's done, and I'm proud of you as students that you've exercised that right. I hope you continue to do it throughout your life. I own several guns, and I've paid for a lot more, and I'm very comfortable with guns. I'm comfortable with concealed guns. There's been a time in my life when I had a concealed weapon permit and carried a concealed gun. But what I'm not comfortable with is the breadth of this law. Because this bill says there shall be no restriction at all, no regulation at all. This is not just about concealed permitted weapons. This is about every kind of firearm. It seems to me that if this bill passed, students could walk up and down the hallway of a dormitory all day carrying anything from a permitted concealed weapon to a semi-automatic firearm. They could enter classrooms and hang out in laboratories and lecture halls so armed. And it just doesn't make sense to me that we prohibit that in courthouses and the Capitol building and elementary schools and secondary schools and bars, but we don't let professors and students have the right to be in laboratories or classrooms without the same protections that we give ourselves. in my opinion, the legislature ought to not micromanage the universities. The regents ought to make reasonable policies. I'm glad they've reevaluated them over the past years. Maybe they need to continually be revisited from time to time, but it is entirely conceivable to me that perhaps even an entire campus, but certainly particular dormitories, might be offered as weapons-free dormitories, just as I understand some of them are as alcohol-free places where students have all sworn not to drink. I just think that it's up to the regents to offer variety, and it's up to students to have some choices. And this bill, in my opinion, would go to drastic measures, and that's why I can't support it.
Senator Rode.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like for us to just kind of step back and try to remove the emotion, because this is an emotional issue, and we tend to get bogged down in stories about mass shootings, even though I think, you know, that's a legitimate concern. But I think we should look at this more from the 30,000-foot level as far as our constitutional rights. Especially in this day and age, recently, in recent months, we had a decision handed down from the Supreme Court in regard to the D.C. gun ban, where they ruled, and very wisely in this case, that our Second Amendment rights apply to individuals. The anti-gun crowd for years has been trying to make the case that that's a group right. Well, I would submit that a group right is an oxymoron. That when the Constitution talks about rights, we are talking about individual rights. And our Constitution, our federal Constitution, is very clear that those rights shall not be infringed. Well, that language is stronger than our state Constitution, which said the right to keep and bear arms shall not be denied. Now we're talking about the emotion that comes into it, because we're talking about 18-year-olds. And as a sidebar, I don't care if 100% of the students are opposed to that. When we're talking about constitutional rights, I cannot justify denying constitutional rights to one group of citizens, adult citizens, regardless of their age or the fact that they're in college. I think that we'd be making a mistake to go down that track, regardless of what they think. The people of Poland in World War II or Germany would have voluntarily gave up their rights. It wasn't a popularity contest. This is about our constitutional, God-given rights to keep and bear arms. And I think this is reasonable legislation. I think that the Board of Regents last year tipped their cards that they would infringe on those rights by the legislation they brought forward last year. So I think this is a step. I think it's reasonable. I don't think it's unreasonable that we should restore or maintain that right. I won't comment on the individual testimony because we get bogged down into the emotion again, but I think it's, you think about all the shootings, the mass shootings that have taken place, law enforcement was a non-issue because it was very legitimate when they say when seconds matter, cops are only minutes away, because that the record has proven that time and time again. But again, I think this is clearly a constitutional issue from a state and federal perspective, and I urge your support of the DuPass motion.
Senator Abdullah.
Well, first let me preface by saying I know where this bill's going, but I think it's not right. If you recall, all the mass shootings on campus, the guns were brought on campus. They weren't on the campus. They were brought onto the campus. And I heard testimony today about a person with a handgun being a good shooter or a bad shooter. You got to assume with people that get carried concealed, they're interested enough in weapons, they know how to shoot. But the other side of that coin is, think about those kids in Columbine that were hiding under desks and under chairs and under everything else. It was, sure would have been a good time for somebody to have a weapon. They wouldn't have killed that many probably. So I don't buy the story about a good shooter, bad shooter. The years I spent in law enforcement, I barely qualified every year. And I always joke that made me a dangerous person, so don't screw with me because I don't know where my bullet's going. But on a serious note, that doesn't – everybody reacts differently under emergency and stressful conditions. So the guy that sits and shoots 100 at a target probably isn't going to shoot 100 when he's in a stressful situation. And like I said, think about all those campuses where the kids – where the shooter came onto the campus and was shooting at these people. Nobody there had a way to defend themselves. And going back to the rifle and shotgun situation on campus where they allow them on campus in some kind of a vault or locker. If you're allowed to bring a shotgun onto campus and put it in a locker, it don't take you very long to get it out of there. And I would much rather defend myself with a shotgun than a handgun. You can do more damage. Just visualize somebody walking in this room right now with a shotgun, with a 5-shell shotgun. They're going to do a heck of a lot more damage than somebody with a 10-shot pistol. And so I see no reason, and I know we're in the minority, but it is a constitutional right, and I think that we should pass this bill.
Senator Heidepan.
Well, I think this has really been a thought-provoking discussion. Senator Roden, I've listened carefully to what you had to say, and I'd be interested if you'd share with me and the others, how do you react when the argument is made, we impose limitations in other places like the Capitol building or like courthouses or bars? Those seem to have gained popular acceptance in terms of being restrictions on our Second Amendment rights, which are important to all of us. How do you respond to that?
Well, maybe you can remind me when the deadline for bill introduction is. Maybe we can change that. But seriously, I respect the question, and I think that was thought-provoking on my part, although I don't see it as the same in a Capitol building. A group of people, that's I don't know off the cuff if I could give you a good answer, because that is legitimate, and I think that is something that I could not give you a good answer on right at this time.
Senator.
Well, just one anecdote. When we're talking about guns and alcohol and all those things, I've worked 28 Sturgis rallies. Originally, I opposed carrying concealed reciprocity from other states. Now that law is in effect, and there has been no shootings at the Sturgis rally where you have a 500,000 people. Drugs, guns, alcohol, and vehicles. There have been no shootings by anybody that has a carried concealed. The shooting a couple years ago with the Hells Angels and the Outlaws, they did not have concealed permits, so they're illegal coming into the state. And so when you get a 500,000 people, half of them on drugs, half of them on alcohol and carrying weapons, and you can control it that good, I don't see any problem here.
Members of the committee, Senate Bill 82, we have a do-pass motion, additional discussion. We have a do-pass motion on Senate Bill 82, additional discussion. Motion is do-pass. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Adella?
Aye.
Senator Hansen?
No.
Heideprim?
No.
Knudsen?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbachberry?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
No.
Motion fails on a 5-4 vote. Do I hear a motion? Senator Knutson.
Chairman, I think this bill is destined to go to the floor in any event, so I move do not pass.
We have a do not pass motion. Do I have a second? We have a do not pass motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a do not pass motion, and we have a second. Is there discussion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
No.
Roden?
No.
Turbach Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
No.
Dempster?
Aye. Motion passes on a 5-4 vote with a do not pass. Ask for a motion to adjourn.
So
we have a motion. We have a second. Discussion. Seeing none. All those in favor? Opposed? We stand adjourned.